All right, so we are in chapter 6 of 2 Samuel. His title is in reference to my wife's like favorite show, so
score points wherever you can.
Yeah, just so you know, I spend way too much time coming up with my titles than I probably should. And it really makes no difference because only 10% of you usually really even look at the title. So it's for my own entertainment purposes, you know. So that's what I do. All right. So if you remember where we left off, we were talking about the Ark of the Covenant and how David was a little nervous after that whole ordeal with Uzzah and touching the Ark and him dying on the spot. And so he parked the Ark. Like I said, probably at the next house, as soon as he could get away from it, and left it at a house of a guy named Obed-Edom, and all of a sudden, Obed-Edom has blessings for the 3 months that the ark is there. And so David says, all right, now it's time to bring it into the city. And where we left off is now we saw when David picked up the ark this time, they carried it exactly as the Torah had commanded them to on the poles. And after the priest took 6 steps, they stopped and made a sacrifice before the 7th step. And you can tell David has probably gone back and read the law and is back, you know, in the right frame of mind and moving this ark into the city of David. Okay, so we're going to start in verse 14. It says, and David danced before the Lord. Sorry, fundamental Baptist. He danced before the Lord with all his might. And David was wearing a linen ephod. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the horn. Okay, so this is an interesting passage with the dancing and all. There is one interpretation out there that David is doing something entirely inappropriate. Right? That he is wearing not much and dancing in front of the ark, as our wonderful picture describes here. Okay, I'm not sure which dance move that is that he is performing. It's clearly the running man. Yeah. Anybody ever seen that movie Can't Buy Me Love with Patrick Dempsey from the 80s and they do the African dance? That's kind of what it looks like. For the 3 people that've seen that movie, that'll resonate with you. All right. So, yeah, but yeah, it's before most of your times. But anyway, so that's one interpretation is that he's doing something, inappropriate. And one of the reasons why people interpret it that way is because of his wife's response that we'll see in a little bit. Michael accuses him of revealing his nakedness or revealing himself. And I'll show you why I really disagree with that interpretation. Okay, first of all, the Jews really like to celebrate. Okay. Some of us were in Jerusalem there last June, and we found ourselves in the middle of a bar mitzvah. Okay? And if you've ever been in the middle of a bar mitzvah, you can join right in. It's like mobile party going through the streets. I mean, they got horns, they got drums, they're clapping, they're singing, they're like grabbing people and doing do-si-do. And you are totally welcome to join in. They want you to join in. Okay, and I can't remember who jumped in and started dancing with him, but somebody from our group was like linked arms with him and was like jumping around. Okay, I don't know if it was Brandon or not. Brandon's not much of a dancer. He's more of a client. He's on a wall somewhere when we're trying to dance. But and a Jewish wedding ceremony, would go throughout the streets, you know, singing, dancing, celebrating. So this idea of him dancing in front of the ark really shouldn't surprise us very much. It's very much part of the celebration in the Jewish culture. The celebrations are very public, and they usually involve music, and they may involve dancing. All right, so I don't think he's doing anything that's untoward here. I think this is all legitimate because David's going to say again and again, I'm doing this for my joy for the Lord. You know, I'm not doing this for anything else. Michael's going to accuse him of something totally different. Okay? So, and the other thing that brings this is the word, right? He wore a linen ephod. Okay, that's the word for ephod. Well, if you look at our definitions, a priestly garment, shoulder cape or mantle, outer garment, worn by an ordinary priest and made of white stuff, worn by the high priest, more costly, woven of gold. Yeah, white stuff. Right? But where does the ephod sit? The ephod sits on your shoulders. Right? It's a garment that goes over your shoulders. So the fact that he would be wearing something less than that doesn't make any sense. Right, that an ephod would go over your shoulders and go down the length of your body. So, and priests wore it. It was a priestly garment, which is, I think, the point. David is wearing a priestly garment. I think that's what Michael is criticizing. Yeah, awesome.
The one where he's dancing?
It's basically what these guys are wearing. It would go over the shoulders, so it's a mantle. So to call this an ephod, that's not an ephod, it's a loincloth, right? That you would never mistake a loincloth for an ephod. So when it says he's wearing a linen ephod, I think he's wearing a priestly garb just like that. Now, why is that strange? Because a king usually dresses like a king, right? A king has grandiose entrances. He has gold, he has jewels, you know, he shows himself as the king. And if we think about it, who's criticizing him? Michael. Who's Michael's father? Saul, who totally misunderstood the idea of being a king. He thought it was all about him. She's very much Saul's daughter. Right? And I think she's criticizing because you're down there with the people. Right? You're dressing in that common white linen ephod. You should be the king. They should be carrying you into the city. And what David is saying, this is the ark of God. Right? I will honor this ark. And I'll tell you, I think there's more connections here, even behind, more than that. So he prepares himself by wearing the special ritual garments, a linen ephod, a piece of clothing otherwise reserved in Israelite society for priests and Levites. So the question is then, why is David wearing this priestly garb? And so we're going to get a little bit deeper, so prepare yourselves on this, because I think there may be a connection here. Okay. When do we first hear about Jerusalem in Scripture? It's not called Jerusalem when we hear it. King of Salem, right? Melchizedek. Right? Melchizedek in Genesis 14. Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine, and notice what his title was. He was priest of the God Most High. Melchizedek was both the king of Jerusalem and priest of the God Most High. Now, let's try to... When else do we hear about Melchizedek in Scripture? Well, one is in Psalm 110, right? A priest after the order of Melchizedek. Right? And who's that in reference to? Psalm 110. Okay? The Messiah. Yeah, Christ, coming Christ. Remember, that's what Peter will reference and say, that's the Lord said to my Lord. Right? And he's saying, look, two lords in this verse. Who are we talking about? And we know this isn't David because David's buried right over there. Right? He says that Psalm 110 was about the Messiah. That's what Peter says. And then we hear it again in Hebrews with that exact same thing, that Jesus Christ was a priest in the order of Melchizedek. Okay? So, see if you can kind of follow where we're going here. Since David is now king of Jerusalem, does he get that same status that Melchizedek had? Because David is not an Aaronic priest. He's not a Levitical priest. But if Christ is a priest in the order of Melchizedek, could David also be a priest in the order of Melchizedek? Does that make sense? Okay. I think that may be what's going on here, because he's going to wear priestly garments, and in just a minute it says he's going to offer sacrifices. That's a priestly function. Okay. So is he taking on this mantle of, since he's king of Jerusalem, he is now a priest after the order of Melchizedek? And so again, the acquisition of this title is in David's line is a reference in Psalm 110. And David is not an Aaronic priest, but could he be a priest in the order of Melchizedek? Okay. Well, if we look at this in 2 Samuel chapter 6, a little bit further on, it says, as the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, Michael, the daughter of Saul, looked out the window and saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart. And they brought in the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent that David had pitched for it, and David offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. Now, certainly David could command the priest to do that, but it does say David offered the sacrifices. That's kind of interesting. Verse 18, and when David had finished offering the burnt offerings and the peace offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord of hosts and distributed among all the people, the whole multitude of Israel, both men and women, a cake of bread, a portion of meat, and a cake of raisins to each one. And then all the people departed, each to his house. And some will translate that cake of raisins as wine, too, as well. Okay? So, do you see some priestly things in that rundown? He offers sacrifices. He pronounces a blessing on the people, and he brings food and drink. And I'll show you how that lines up very well with Melchizedek in Genesis 14.
David was a psalmist, right?
Yes, for a lot of them. Yeah.
So did he write the psalm that talks about the line of Melchizedek? I mean, was that...
I think that is a psalm of David. Yeah.
So then that would be in his... It's pretty strong that was in his head.
Yeah.
He wrote the psalm.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so I'm just trying to make some connections there on why David is dressed this way. Okay? Now, I can't prove it definitively, but I think there might be a connection there. So here's Michael, his wife. Remember the wife that he got back. Remember Saul had given her away to another man during the the rebellion, if you want to call it that. It wasn't really a rebellion because David was the anointed one, but his perceived rebellion. And David's condition, remember, to Abner was, I'll make a treaty if you bring Michal back to me. Because he wanted that piece of Saul's family and his family to legitimize everything. So other women are present at the festivities. It says men and women are there. So it's not like this is just only a male celebration and all the women are outside. So other women are there. Wouldn't you think the king's wife should be there too? She's not. She's up in the window. Okay? We don't know why she's not there, but the tone of the passage pretty much suggests that she's got a pretty negative attitude toward David. And if you reject the Lord's anointed, are you not also rejecting the Lord? Okay? And remember, her father was once king. Right, we don't know a ton about Michal and David's relationship. We have some high points and we have some low points. Right? So if we assess Michal here, number one, we know she's a daughter of Saul. And sometimes the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. Right? Back in 1 Samuel 19, which seems to be a positive thing for Michal. Remember, this is when Michal helps David escape her father. You guys remember that story in 1 Samuel 19? And it says, Michal took an image or a teraphim and laid it on the bed and put a pillow of goat's hair at its head and covered it with the clothes. Well, that looks really good, right? She helped David escape. But what did she use to pretend like that was David in the bed? A teraphim is an idol. It means she had an idol. So what does that tell you? Well, is she inclined to idol worship? You know, was she one of those typical northern Israelites that syncretized Yahweh worship and idol worship? Because she has an idol. That's what she uses to disguise the bed. You know, kind of the old Ferris Bueller kind of put hair on the mannequin, and then you just see him in the bed, and you think he's laying it. That's what she did to try to make him escape. But she used an idol to do that. Okay, so what's the idol doing in the house? All right, kind of just circumstantial evidence. You know, we're just building the case, but maybe something there. Okay, and Michal could have resented David for forcing her to leave her second husband. Remember, her husband cries all the way through the mountains until, you know, Abner tells him to turn around and go back home, and he finally skirts away. But was she upset that that had happened too? We have no idea what that marriage was like. Saul gave her away, but was she happy there and David pulled her out of that life? Or was she, we don't really know. And so maybe there's a lot of resentment from Michal towards David from all these things. I mean, she's got her father who used to be king and now David's king. And, you know, she was with this other man and now she's back with David. Where's the resentment coming from? But it says she despised him in her heart. So it's a serious hatred that she has for him. Okay? That's not just, oh, she disagreed with his decision. Okay? This isn't your common marriage disagreement. She despised him in her heart. All right? It's pretty strong. Okay? So whatever the motivation, David's leaping and dancing before the Lord was not appreciated. Again, she despised him in her heart. And in this moment, I think she's much more a daughter of Saul than a wife of David's. Okay? She may be showing where her allegiance lies in all this. Okay. And the ark is set in place, and David, once again, acting, I think, quite priestly, offers burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. And while the priest could have been commanded by David to offer sacrifices, once again, I see potential parallels between David and Melchizedek. Because Melchizedek blessed Abram in Genesis 14, he wasn't even Abraham yet, by the God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth. David is going to bless the people in the name of the Lord of hosts. Okay, that's Yahweh Sabaoth. And then Melchizedek brought Abram and his men bread and wine. David gives the people a cake of bread, a portion of meat, and it says a cake of raisins, but maybe also wine. Okay, so both men pronounce a blessing. Both men give food and drink to the Israelites. Okay, or in Abram's case, the future of what will be Israel. Does that make sense? Any thoughts on that before? Because I've been kind of rambling on the Melchizedek piece. Yeah.
He also made him wear the priestly garment because he didn't see himself as being the king.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked a little bit about that. David has the correct view. He's a steward. He's not in charge. Yahweh's king, and I'm the steward. So maybe that has something to do with it. We don't have these stories of, although, you know, David will build himself a palace and he will do those things. But and we'll see in the next chapter, right at the end here, he kind of, once he builds his palace, he's like, wait a second, I shouldn't have this when the ark's down in the tent. You know, he feels bad. He understands. I think he might get that. So that may be something, too. Hey, anything else there? Anyone want to contribute? Giving you a chance. All right. All right, verse 20. And David returned to bless his household. But Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, how the king of Israel honored himself today. Can you hear the sarcasm dripping off of those words? uncovering himself today before the eyes of his servants, female servants, as one of the vulgar fellows or worthless fellows, shamelessly uncovers himself. And David said to Michael, "It was before the Lord who chose me above your father," seems like he knows something, "and above all his house to appoint me as prince over Israel." Not king, but prince. Okay, the people of the Lord, and I will celebrate before the Lord. I will make myself yet more contemptible than this. You thought this was bad. You ain't seen nothing yet, right? "And I will be abased in your eyes." If you don't like me celebrating in front of the Lord now, just wait. This is what my lifestyle is going to look like. Okay? "But by the female servants of whom you have spoken, by them I shall be held in honor." And Michael, the daughter of Saul, had no child to the day of her death. Right? A little footnote there after this whole thing. Okay? So here's what happened. If we modernize this into the 1950s or so. Okay? So he is scolded by his wife when he comes in the door. Okay? And the accusations are right here. Number one, that he uncovered himself before the eyes of his servants, female servants, which we've kind of discounted in the terms of nakedness because of the ephod. Okay? And number two, that he's one of the vulgar or worthless fellows. She basically says, I mean, this worthless idea, it's like sons of Belial. It's a heavy accusation, right? You're scum. You know, you're pagan. You're like those pagans that disrobe when they do things. Remember the Baal prophets at the sacrifice where they're all running around naked cutting themselves and stuff. That was a pagan thing. So that's what she's accusing him of. It's a heavy accusation. Yeah, Mark.
In some Mideast cultures, Mideast North Africa cultures, some would... start getting into tribal war, when you start getting into elders, it's not so much the nakedness, it's more of like you're expected to wear certain gold and you're expected to wear certain things.
Yeah.
Like that necklace, if you're not wearing it, you're naked in the eyes of your
sure.
elder family. So that's probably what happened. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's what she's criticizing is you're not looking like the king you should look like. Yeah, you're not acting like the king. Yeah, yeah. You're the top dog around here. Start acting like it. You know that she wants the power. She wants that same thing. She benefits from that.
She's like equivalent of the Queen of England not wearing her crown. You
know? Yes. Yeah.
So that's pretty much what I see.
Yeah. But then, you know, she kind of has this immoral kind of accusation to it. You know, it's not, you don't love the Lord. You were trying to do this for your own benefit, right? And David's not going to take very kindly to that accusation. Here's just a reference here to this idea of nakedness. Now, when we talk about uncovering nakedness, we think of one thing. That's not necessarily the case, all right? So let me just give you an example. This was the altar where they made the sacrifices there in the temple. And they had this ramp built that the priest would take the sacrifice up to sacrifice it. The reason why they build a ramp and don't have a ladder is because you know the general way they wore clothing, right? It's, you know, if you think you're in Scotland with a kilt or with a tunic or whatever. So if I'm going up the ladder behind somebody, you see, you don't want to, that would be considered uncovering nakedness, right? I'm not supposed to see that. So they built this ramp so that would never happen to the priest. The priest would never have a scandalous wardrobe malfunction like that, right? Because at that angle, that'll never happen. So that's why they have the ramp there. It's because they want to protect the priest's integrity, their modesty and all that. And so that's one of the references there of uncovering oneself. Okay? Yeah. Okay? So I believe Michael is criticizing David for removing his kingly attire, wearing this simple linen ephod and congregating among the common people. Okay? Saul was your typical Near Eastern king. I'm up here, the people are down here. David is now with the people, right? Remember the Shakespeare nerds, remember Julius Caesar? In Julius Caesar, Brutus goes and speaks to the people up on the platform, right? But when Mark Antony comes to speak to the people, he comes down from the platform amongst the people. And what does that do? Well, that puts him on the level of the people. They relate to him, they love him. He's one of us, right? And that's how David sees it. And that's what Michael is criticizing.
He lived in a cave for
yeah.
X number of years.
I think you want a little bit of social interaction, right?
You've built some humility.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I was in a cave for 20 years. How am I better than these people?
Yeah, that's a good point. And again, I think she views the throne in Israel in much the same way her father did. Yeah, this is a power structure. Saul was a king like all the other nations. That's what Israel wanted. And David's not that kind of king. Okay. So David rejects her accusations. He claims that his emotional display was before the Lord. And furthermore, such actions are appropriate for one who had been appointed by the Lord as, again, prince, not king, prince, ruler, steward over Israel, the people of the Lord. Because if you're a prince, there's a king. Right? The prince doesn't rule. The prince is under the king. So he calls himself the prince of Israel. So in rejecting David, Michael was rejecting the Lord. And he's saying, God chose me, not your father or his whole house. He chose me. Right? So if you reject me, you are rejecting the Lord. Yeah.
I'm just going to point out that for us, a prince is somebody who's in line for the throne, but that's not the Middle Eastern understanding. I mean, when we're reading about when things were in Babylon and in Persia, there were many princes.
Sure.
That were just, they were like, they call them satraps and governors and so on, all the various
things. Nobility.
They aren't necessarily somebody that's in line to be king.
Yeah, I mean, well, when you think we even have Satan referenced as a prince at times, right? So that doesn't mean he's in line for any throne, right? He has some ruling capabilities, but he's not. But there's a greater power than the prince. There's always a greater power. Yeah. Okay. So David's actions may have resulted in some what we might call embarrassing moments, not because it was embarrassing in the eyes of some people, perhaps. But he says he's willing to become even more undignified, even humiliated for the Lord's sake. And David was willing to risk being misunderstood and even humiliated as he pursued a deeper relationship with God, right? And so Paul says that, but I think there's a parallel for us, right? Yeah. Right? And now I'm not saying every time we sing, you have to raise your hands, you have to do this, but there's this idea of being willing to be different for God. Right? Now, I'm not saying be super weird and alienate people, right? Like, Christians are supposed to be weird, but not like super weird, you know, not so weird that people don't want to talk to us, kind of weird, but you're supposed to be different. Like, people are supposed to see you and see how you act and say, well, that's different, right? And responding to the Lord in worship is, I think, a great example of that. I mean, we don't have a lot of these ceremonial things that the Israelites have, but we have worship. And again, I'm not saying that's the only way to worship, but... Right, whether it's prayer, whether it's worship, whatever, if we're not willing to kind of, people will look at us and go, that's kind of strange, I don't know why that guy does that, you know, then you're probably not getting this thing right. You're supposed to be okay with, they're not supposed to understand what we do, right? They're supposed to look at us and go, what is that about, right? And I think that's what David's saying, is I'll do a lot worse than that. You think that was bad? If God calls me to it, I'll embarrass myself a lot more than that, because he's the one that put me here. Right, I owe everything to him. I'll humiliate myself for him if I have to. Okay, so at the end of that, as a result of this incident, Michael, the daughter of Saul, had no child to the day of her death. Now, there's two possibilities here. One is oftentimes this is viewed as that God cursed her, right? And she was not, because of this rejection of God and rejection of God's anointed, that she's not able to have a child, and people would interpret that as a curse against her because of her disobedience. However, some commentators think that it's not barrenness, it's the fact that David ceased any relations with her. That David said, you reject me, you reject the Lord, we're done. I got other wives. Right? Now, I'm sure that's not what he was thinking, but does this leave such a distaste in David's mouth, right, that this is so... I cannot believe she's done this, but that he doesn't go into her anymore. And so that may be what the author is telling us, that David is done with Michael. And really what that does is, and remember, Michael's the last link to Saul, other than Ishbosheth, not Ishbosheth, but Mephibosheth, who's in hiding at this point. But he's lame, and he's not really in any position to do anything. This is, especially in terms of the royal line, Michael's the last link. She's the last bit of Saul's blood in this whole place. And if she doesn't have any more kids, well, what has happened to Saul's dynasty? It is done. Right? Yeah.
What about in the New Testament where it talks about your relationship with your wife, that compare like your relationship with the Lord? So if David is the one choosing to pretty much banish her from him, is that not him causing division in that marriage?
I think it's hard to put them side by side, because David clearly doesn't practice God's design for marriage. He has multiple wives, right?
That his prayer life is not hindered at all.
That's true. Yeah.
So wouldn't it probably be more Michael saying, I'm done with you, I despise you,
Maybe that too. Maybe Michael decides she's done with him. Yeah, maybe that too. Yeah, I guess that's a good way to think about it. Yeah, because she is the one that's guilty here in the sense of rejecting God. Right? And so now David is, I mean, because we say, well, is David now concerned with being yoked with an unbeliever? Well, no, because he's got another wife that's a from outside of Israel too. Michael's not even.
There's a lesson there about the difficulties of a marriage.
Yeah, if one has faith in God and one doesn't, there's automatic, bumping heads.
In the human nature piece of it is, if she despised him in her heart, and he's like, you think that's bad, watch this and do more.
Yeah.
I mean, is she really gonna start going to the bedroom, you know, get better eyes on him?
Yeah, that doesn't exactly...
I'll show him and he's like, all right.
Yeah, so that's a good point. So I guess the point is, it's not necessarily this divine curse. It may just be one or the other deciding this is done. Yeah, and that may be what's going on. And like you said, David's got wives, going to have concubines. I mean, that's, unfortunately, that's one of the blights on David. We see that, right? So I think that's the ultimate idea is however it happens. I mean, like I said, Saul's dynasty is now eliminated. All trace of Saul's DNA is now gone from the royal line in Israel after this episode. Right? And again, so that's what I said. And remember the blessings of Obed-Edom in chapter 6. In the 3 months the ark was with Obed-Edom, there were blessings all over the place. And we assume that probably meant children, maybe. And now here's a prime opportunity. The ark of God is in Jerusalem. The city is to be fruitful. It's to grow. And Michael goes the other direction. Right, Michael goes the route of barrenness rather than having more children. Okay, we'll stop there. I'll start with 7 next week. So next week we're going to get into the Davidic covenant, and David is going to express a desire to build the temple of the Lord. And at first, Nathan the prophet, our introduction to Nathan comes in chapter 7. He will become very important later on, especially in the Bathsheba stories. Right, you are the man, or thou art the man, however you want to say that one. But and when he first asked, Nathan says, "Yeah, go for it, go do it." So Nathan doesn't even consult the Lord and says, "Yeah, I'm sure God will be totally okay with you building the temple." And God's going to step in and say, "Wait, I'm not going to have you build the temple, but I have a covenant for you that's really, really important." And that'll be what we talk about next week. Okay, all right, let's close in a word of prayer. Lord, thank you for today. Thank you for all that you show us as we study this, Lord. It's just that there isn't quite any other study like the study of your word, Lord. And I pray that we would always allow your word to work with us, to change us, to move us closer to your will. And even in these narrative stories that we see successes, we see failures, we see your people in action with their human shortcomings and your divine intervention to get your will done, Lord. And we thank you for that. And we know that happens in our own lives as well. And I pray you bless us and keep us as we go. Be with the 10:45 service. And give us some good time with family and friends this afternoon. And we thank you for it. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks, guys.